welcome to Unidentified Wargamer. Each week I interview a wargamer and identify them with a hobby. This week I've got on team captain for Denmark, Rune. How are you going, mate?
Hello. All good. Excited.
It's good to hear. Yeah. How's your week been treating you so far?
Oh, man. You know, I have a classic 9-to-5 job. Like, I guess I could technically more the hours than 9-to-5. But these weeks, I'm just not able to, you know, really put my focus at work because I can't stop thinking about Age of Sigmar.
The age-old dilemma of being obsessed with wargaming.
Yeah, for sure. 100%.
Have you got your whole army painted and ready to go then?
I do. I've been bringing Lumina Throne Lords to the World Championship the last 2 years as well. So it's a lot of the same models. It's almost a tradition that they're on the tabletop.
Well, you've beaten me to the question there, because I was going to ask if that's like a normal list you sort of run, or is something a bit out of the wild for you, but as it seems to be, it's quite a common list for you.
Yeah, I mean, at least Lumineth as a whole, usually more classic Sentinels, that sort of list, shooty list, but I'm bringing more of a more a fighty style Lumineth list this year. And
is that your normal sort of play style with lists? Is you like to be pretty castly with like a shooting in the background, or what's like your normal list sort of style?
I like tricks. I think I like to have options. So ever since Games Workshop came with the latest edition, the armies have gotten smaller. Units are more expensive. Table is smaller. So there's less room for tricks, I find. So a lot of the classic... they're not able to bring tricks, because you still need to have output, you still need to have some defensive mechanisms and whatnot, but I find Lumineth still able to have tricks, so I enjoy playing them.
Yeah. Well, when you've got a model, because I'm guessing you've got Teclis in your list.
I got Teclis.
You've got a model like Teclis that can do a lot of things. He's very versatile and you've got lots of tricks.
Yeah, he's lovely. I like it. And I used to have Severeth as well, for the same reason, tie up stuff. It's really hard to see where he is, but to have the foresight to know where he will land when he moves around.
Yes, he's very dastardly, that one.
Yeah.
Really frustrating to work around if you haven't got the ways to deal with him.
Exactly.
Is Lumineth an army you've sort of been running for quite a while, or you sort of pick it up here and there for Worlds? What's your go with armies recently?
Well, I play quite a few armies. Competitively, it's mostly Lumineth. So at tournaments, mostly been playing Lumineth. Been playing Nighthaunt when the new book came out. Cities of Sigmar is my first army, so I got a special place. Last year at Worlds... we were two guys that played that as a main army, Seed of Sigmar. So I just defaulted to Lumineth. And this year, with the win rates and the strengths of the book, it was just an obvious choice too, that I would be playing that this year.
It's a very strong book and very strong in teams, I can see.
For sure. And I think that the recent point changes brought them down quite a bit. And I think that, you know, some armies, they are, you can say they're very strong, but it won't take a lot for them to be not very good. You know, they're just like on a knife's edge. And I think Lumineth is basically at that point. Because there's a lot of armies where the classic Sentinel list will struggle. And I'm sure everybody in the competitive scene, whoever brings them at like their normal tournament, local tournaments, or if they're bringing them to big tournaments, but everybody knows that in that scene now. There's definite counters to it.
They're a known thing in the wargaming universe in terms of a way to deal with them somewhat. If you have the opportunity to deal with them, but a lot of armies still can't deal with them anyway.
Sure. But in a team setting, it's a different story, right? But yeah, a singles tournament, some armies, they will just falter. Not be able to do anything about it, yeah.
And is the reason you run Lumineth because they're a strong army, or you like the aesthetic, or you like the way they play?
I like the way they play, and they're strong. And aesthetically, I think they're pretty cool too, but most of my armies are actually Old Hammer models. So the classic High Elf models. So I don't actually have the proper Warden model or Sentinel model in my list. They're all the spearmen and archers from
Okay,
like
that's
old
very cool.
sculpts.
You don't very often see them lying around a whole lot.
No, and my Teclis, he's from 92, and that was when
Well,
Denmark won the European Championship in soccer.
wow.
So football. Yeah, so hopefully he can bring in a trophy at the World Championship this year.
Yes, best of luck with that.
Thank
As long as you don't versus Australia, I'll let you have it.
Yeah, well, I hope I do. I've ran into a couple Australian players on TTS, and always been a joy.
Oh, nice. Yep.
Last year's captain was
Oh, yep. Matt. Yep.
Matt Tyrell, I think, and
Yes.
Stuart is also Australian. Yeah,
Yes. He's Australian but living in
living in
Japan.
Japan, right? Yeah, what a jet setter.
Yeah.
I also ran into, I played a lot of his TTS tournaments as well. Yeah.
So you play on TTS quite often then?
I did at, in the Corona times, and we did compete in one of the large TTS tournaments as well, the a couple of guys from the Danish team, and won it. Yeah.
Oh, nice. Very nice.
Against the Spanish and the French. You get to recognize a lot of the people there. That's I think TTS has been a blessing. 100% the hobby is a physical one, you know, it's where you meet and you love, there's different like loves of the sculpts and the paintings and you know the camaraderie around it, but TTS is just excellent for filling in the void when there's different reasons or for you can't competing or you know to meet people from other countries.
Do you enjoy playing the game on TTS, or you just find it's more of a necessity for certain things?
Enjoy more physically. Let me say it like that.
Yep.
I do enjoy it on the computer, but it's more tough to have focus, and I find that you're, you know, the little tricky things you can do that can really turn a game around, like very tight positioning with your models and such, is much harder in TTS. For some reason, just like how you view the battlefield, I guess. Yeah.
I heard someone say, like, why is it not just like a flat plane and you're just moving tokens around rather than like these three-dimensional models over
Yeah.
terrain and stuff like that? I feel like because it's janky and it's not janky in the way that the game plays, because it's not made to play a mass battle sim, but it's made to play small tabletop games. I feel like you could definitely just do like a bird's eye view and just use tokens,
Yeah, you could.
because I mean the models, some of them are, look really nice, but then others are just a 2D picture.
Yeah, but yeah, half my games in real life are like that, I guess. You know, because if I'm doing a practice game on my own in the basement, or if I'm doing a practice game against a guy from a local club, you know, sometimes it's just empty bases or I don't know, Blood Warriors representing. Something else entirely.
Good bit of proxy hammer.
Good bit of proxy hammer for sure.
One of my locals, Corey, he is well known for that. He'll bring a bunch of bases and stick some dice to them or stick some random bits of pieces. He knows exactly what all the models are, and then because there's so many proxies, you sort of lose track of what's going
Yeah.
on.
It's a little bit
And
like
you get slightly confused.
playing against Fire Slayers.
Yes, exactly right.
Yeah,
You don't know what one's the hero, what one's the normal model.
exactly. Yeah, nobody got an idea,
Yeah.
but I think we in my local club here in Copenhagen in Denmark, we share a lot of armies.
Okay.
So, like, I think I have maybe five armies that I don't own entirely, but I like with one or two other people from the group. We used to make an agreement that, you know, one person buys the models, another person paints them, something like
That's
that.
cool.
And yeah, so mostly, you know, all the models are in the club, so you can just go use whatever is in the shared cap, yeah, shared cabinets, whatever you call it. Yeah,
Is that because you're part of a gaming group, or is that a usual thing in Denmark?
I think it's mostly us doing it in our club. I'm not sure. I doubt it's that typical, because you know that Warhammer also has that, you know, ownership of collecting and that stuff. And you know, also people in our club have that relation to one or two of those armies. But it's just impossible to keep up, I find, with you know, the rate of books coming out now. Like,
Six in like 3 months. It's a bit
it's absolutely
ridiculous.
insane, and there's no reason, or like, no, I can't keep up with like a day job and two kids and painting and buying all that stuff. So that's
You're
our
making a
solution.
solid effort.
Yeah, exactly. I do enjoy it.
How big is your gaming group?
Well, we got our club, which last time I checked got 50 paying members, but that's different war
Okay, so
games. And then Age of Sigmar in that club might be 15 to 20, I'd say, something like that. And six of those are on the national team. So that's just to give like an understanding of like
yeah.
how dense it is and how small of a community we got in Denmark. Shout out to
Okay, I was gonna ask how competitive your group was, but you just answered it there.
Yeah, exceptionally competitive. And I think that might also scare some people away, like the hobbyists. I mean, we try to be as inclusive as we can, and there's different incentives in the club, like hobby days and you know, come bring a random army sort of game days. But you know, if you have like a high density of super competitive people, it sort of just comes naturally. There's a
Yeah,
vibe.
that's fair.
But yeah, Denmark as a whole, you know, is, I think I know most of the Danish players in all of Denmark, due to my, you know, being a representative in the international scene, but also just from coming to different tournaments. We have like Denmark got three major regions. We got Jutland and Fyn. I'm not sure how you pronounce that in English, what name that is called. But then we also got the Cape Copenhagen or Sjælland. And there's like a handful of clubs in each of those regions at most. So people drive a little bit to get there, and but you know, it's nothing like what people would drive in the States, I imagine, something like that, or in Australia.
Would you say like maybe like 100 people, 200 people in the gaming scene there?
Yeah, I mean, in the competitive scene, probably around that area, yeah, around that number. There's a lot of other, you know, non-competitive players, of course, and I wouldn't have the number for that. But like our, I think our biggest singles tournament has been like 50 players, I think. And teams, we've managed to push that a little bit, but then we also got people coming from Sweden and Germany and
Yeah, because I
neighboring
suppose
countries.
all of the larger countries, you just generally have the people from your country or maybe one neighboring country. But I suppose in Europe, because of the transport system
Yeah.
and everything else, your scene's a lot larger than what it would be just limited to one country.
For sure. I think the Scandinavian countries are doing what they can to stick together in that. And we've seen that grow quite a bit lately. Like a lot more coming to each other's tournaments. A lot of Swedes come to Denmark to play, and recently Norway as well. Norway got a really good competitive scene, like growing. Like they haven't historically been as known as Sweden has been, but I think there's competition for that position.
And then how do you find with all the Nordic countries and the European countries with like language barriers? Is most of the people that speak English there, or do you find a lot of people don't speak English for native?
We speak English together, even though we should probably understand each other speaking our native tongue. But it's just, when you're playing, you want communication to be clear. Like, not that sort of misunderstanding where did you say he was inside 3 inches or outside 3 inches or whatever could be the topic, right? So we just not default to English. Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair enough. And how long have you been involved in the gaming scene then?
Well, I collected Warhammer when I was like I'm 33 years old now, and I collected that maybe 20 years ago or something. But nothing that sticked. I think I was basically like the only guy like collecting back then, painting a little bit, so I just dropped it. Then 2.5 years ago, a friend of mine was like, "Hey, do you have an old box of Warhammer on your attic, just like anybody else does?" And like, yeah, I do have that. Yeah, why don't you take it down and let's have a game?" And we had just had a 500-point game, which was like 2.5 years ago, 3 years ago maybe. And yeah, and it really stuck. I've always been loving competitiveness and like trying to. I really just enjoy understanding a concept, like understanding a game or whatever it is to its fullest. So yeah, even though it's not been that long, well, 3 years is a sum of time, but yeah, it's been quite intense, I guess, for that period. I think my wife would say the same.
Yeah, bet. Going from not playing to be the team captain in 3 years, I'm sure you're gonna be pretty obsessed to get to that rate.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. But it's also the camaraderie in it. Like, I see these guys a lot, and for sure, I've watched or listened to a couple of your other interviews. I'm not sure how many captains you've interviewed, but that is, by the way, they're really awesome because it gives a different perspective of how each like person's local scene is. And of course, a benefit in Denmark is that it's super close. So a lot of people. A lot of people I see all the time from the wargaming and that sense of camaraderie, and it's just awesome. It's like a real team. It's not eight people playing singles in a team setting, for instance, if just say in Worlds, but it could also be whatever international tournament or field trip we do. It's like it's a group of guys together performing. If someone loses a game. Game, you don't talk about that, like in the sense that the person lost the game, the team lost that game, because we also were part of the pairing process and the preparation process and everything. So I think it also, like that feeling is also just a nice thing to have in your daily life rather than playing
Yes.
singles.
Yeah,
So.
they both have their own sort of ways about them, but I found because teams is not just limited to you won or you lost, it's how did you go as a team? Because you could be the player that's thrown under the bus and have a shocking match, but your team wins. So you're at that elated level because you were able to provide for your team, even though you lost, like that winning benefit somewhere else.
Exactly. And that's when you have pairing, that's always how it is. You're not going to win in the pairing process. You're not going to match up perfectly in all of your games. Because that would mean the other opposing team was incredibly dumb. That just doesn't happen. Right?
Yes,
So
it shouldn't
it shouldn't happen,
happen.
right? And then in some points, you're under the bus, or you're like, okay, just take 5 points from this game. And that'll be your sort of your win condition for that. But even then, if you don't take your 5 points, it's at least in the situation when you're competing, don't dwell on that. Got to focus on the next game.
And so, did you go to last year's Worlds?
I did go to last year's Worlds, and I went the last 2 times. So 2021, Denmark won in Milan.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Congratulations on that.
Thanks. Yeah. It was the first tournament where it wasn't ETC. So it's like the first Worlds in the standalone, or yeah, where it's just Age of Sigmar. And then last year it was in Prague. And I think we placed fourth behind the Swedes.
That's solid. Yep.
Yeah, that's the worst.
Yeah, I've been reading all the banter on the on Twitter, and I've been seeing it all.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we did that, and whoever is out there that could be listening and thinking about joining a national team or that sort of Warhammer perspective, I think they should, because again, the camaraderie is just awesome.
Pretty much at the start of the podcast, maybe 20 or 30 episodes ago, it seemed to have been. And continued now that the running theme between everyone has pretty much been the main draw for the game outside of being a competitive game is the community was always like the key word from every episode that seemed to pop out. Cause I think one of the guys asked me on the podcast, he's like, oh, what is like a unique or interesting theme that sort of runs between a lot of the episodes? And it was community or camaraderie is the main pull for a lot of players.
Yeah, I think so. Like, you'd be playing something like, because it is a physical game, you meet up, you know, you take your time to do the travel down to a local club to play your game. It's for those kind of people that like to meet in person. And that's also, of course, the difference we talked about earlier about the difference between TTS and club games is you don't get that, obviously. TTS.
And how far away is your local club?
10 minutes on a bike. Yeah. Okay. So, you know, it's Copenhagen, everybody bikes. So, yeah, it just takes a couple of minutes to go there on a bike. Yeah.
Oh, nice. Makes it nice and easy then.
Definitely. And all the models are just in the clubhouse. So, you just show. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes it even easier, especially if you've got to ride a bike. Like, couldn't imagine trying to carry an army case with you on a bicycle.
Yeah, well, I think people do. We can take anything on a bike. I guess we're a little bit like the Dutch when it comes to that.
Yeah. And then you said you also play in your basement alone quite often as well for practice.
Yeah, I think just shifting the models around a little bit. We got a couple of guys that do it more. In our club scene than I do, but it just gives you the perspective of like, okay, what if I deployed like this? What would he do? And you know, it aggravates some ideas when you actually see it on the board rather than when you just imagine it or something like that, right? And it's a little bit like solving a riddle at times, right? When it comes to that. I know there's a way that I can play this match. I just haven't found it yet. And then you're trying to investigate that. And
you like the problem solving and puzzle solving aspect of it.
Definitely do, yeah. And that's also how we prep a lot. And when we want to compete for an international tournament like Worlds. It's been a while since I've had like an actual game. But I've played maybe
where you sort of
10 games.
Deploy and go through to round 5 and have a natural conclusion rather than what resetting after turn 2 or 3.
Yeah, so we're like, talking, helping each other all the time. Like, okay, maybe you shouldn't do that because then I would be able to do this. What about if you move around here? Okay, let's start all over because that plan was bad. Then we have a game like that. And I mean, I think that really is what makes Denmark a good team in the competitive scene is that we have those sort of games a lot, and I've been whenever we get a new member in the competitive scene, we have like an academy is what we call it, so you can be a member of the Danish academy, and that's where you're sort of taught to play Warhammer, I guess. If you're really interested in potentially playing at an international level, then you can apply for the academy. And I think people coming in there, they think they have an idea of how those games are managed when you talk about it, but they don't actually, because it's like it's so far from the regular Warhammer, you know. It's you don't roll any dice a lot of the time. You're just like, okay, you should deal about 4 damage in this situation. What if you gave more? What if you gave less? And then you talk about it a little bit.
I know, I think it was Phil Marsh was on the Miscast podcast, and he was talking about that's how he practices his games, is like a deliberate practice where you're using constant odds, so there's no variation in dice, because things could just go hot for you or super cold, and that's not a realistic way that the game should be played generally, because you are going to have those games where it does work like that, but most of the time it's not going to work to those odds. And then you can see, oh, well, this plan's failed. Well, there's no point spending the next hour continuing along this route. You might as well just reset and learn some more. So doing that deliberate practice. So if someone wants some, like, an in-depth thought for that, I'd definitely check out that episode of Miscast.
I'll check that out too. Maybe get an idea of how Phil's brain works. But I think that's great to do like that. And of course, sometimes something bad happens, and those scenarios are also good to sort of have a plan for. What if I play Lumineth, right? So what if Teclis dies turn one to this shooty army, even though 60% of the times he shouldn't, still like 40% of the times he will. Okay, then how do I manage that game? How do I try and bring in the most points from that match? We also have those scenarios, but of course practicing more for the more likely scenarios, I guess, because everybody got limit, nobody got unlimited time. I listened to some of Rob's honest Wargamer interviews with some of the captains, and there was some teams mentioned there they would play 100 games in a month, something crazy like that. You know, we don't have time for that, unfortunately. So we have to be trying to maximize where it makes sense.
It sounds like when they're getting those 100 games in, that it's more towards that aspect what you were talking about there, where you're deliberately resetting after turn two or three, or even deployment, and then you count that as a game.
Fair.
Because I know, like, if you can pop up those stats anyway, if you can try and make it sound like you're, oh, I've played 100 games with this army in the last 2 weeks, I mean, it's gonna play a little bit of the head games.
For sure. You better be scared of us. I played 100
Yeah,
games.
yeah, yeah.
But how good were
Well, I was
those?
even listening. Yeah. I put down one model and reset counts as a game, right? So it's definitely a lot of mind games beforehand. Because I think even I was listening to one of our local podcasts, and they were saying one of the things Team England was doing was they were talking about bringing corn. And Australia's like, oh, we've got to bring corn because England's bringing corn, or all these other countries are bringing corn. And then in the end, England wasn't bringing corn. And they sort of felt like they'd duped them out of taking the wrong army because they'd heard it down the grapevine that these other teams were taking corn too. So the mind games have already started.
Definitely. Like we saw corn on one of the English players at Blood Tithe, but by then we had pretty much decided not to bring corn. But it's super challenging, right? Books coming out all the time. Like, do you want to? Like, there's a risk. Is that risk worth it? When the books are so balanced and you're losing the, you know, confidence in an army because you haven't played it that much. I would say we make swaps pretty late as well in our lineup, but there's of course a pro and con in that.
Well, even speaking to Sam last week, he was like, oh, we've taken Stuart McCowan off of Gits. He's played like 100 games with Gits,
Yeah, I
and
heard
we've thrown
that.
him on corn.
I'm sure he's gonna do great anyway. She's a great
Yes,
player.
he loves those techie lists. Like that. That's where he, what do you, what's the word? Nah, it's gone now. That's where he does in that sort of aspect anyway. He sort of thrills on those sort of armies. Thrives, that's the word. What thrives? He
Where he
thrives in
thrives.
that aspect of the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. Me too. I think a lot of players like to play that many hours, they like that aspect. Not everybody, of course, but if you put in that much time, and you like the ones where you can be a bit tricky or techie. So that would definitely also be like preferred play style, I think, from a lot of people here in Denmark.
Do you find you have a play style and sort of like the more generic terms of being like an aggressive player or a reactive player?
Oh, that's a tough question. I think I'm very analytical in the game. So if it's the best approach to be aggressive, then I would pick that path. If it's the best approach to try and wait it out, then I would pick that path. And you know, in some matchups, you're going to be okay. This is a losing matchup, and you can either go down the route. 1 out of 5, I'll win it, but I'll lose it with 0 points if that doesn't work out. And there's other situations where you're like, okay, this is a losing matchup, but I can might get like 8 out of 20 points from the matchup. And then that, you know, it has to do with like, how did your other pairings go? How are you reading the game? Which path do you want to take? So I guess in that sense, it's more reactive.
But having those a lot of games under your belt and having that deliberate practice, you don't have a set play style. Like, you're not the aggressive person, the reactive person. You're sort of reacting to the game as a whole and choosing how you want to come at the game rather than letting your play style determine it from the game's even started.
Yeah, I would say that for sure. Like, I would try and have a game plan like before I start the game, and I have that like 9 out of 10 times, because you're playing on a chess clock, so you can't, you know, you can't just wait it out and do it during the day. It can't just be beer hammer where you're making the plan as you go, because some people are really good at that, of course. But I try to have an idea of what I want to do, and then alter that depending on what happens.
Yeah, fair enough. That makes sense. It's definitely a different play style for a lot of people.
Definitely.
I suppose it's also determined, like you've said, you've got the academy there. So probably how you go through the academy determines how you want to play differently as well, or how you want to come to the game as a gaming style.
Yeah, so our academy is like we've only had it this year. So I don't have that many learnings from it, you can say, because we just started. But last year, just to set the context of what it is in Denmark, is that you could apply for the academy last year. And based on that, we picked out 8 players to play at Worlds. But we have the academy constantly and pick people from there. We don't pick people from there, but people meet in that setting to then agree on, okay, let's go to Alliance Open in Netherlands. Great tournament, by the way. So whoever's considering going, is that another team tournament there in Netherlands? Or Blood Tithe or whatever. People just meet in that setting and they try to make each other better. Instead of hiding list tech, you shared. So you're trying to get ahead of, like, if everybody is super secretive, you're not making each other better, right? So you, as a community, as a whole, you'll be less skilled.
I suppose having the academy is a bit different to other countries, because you've got a smaller country, so you're able to get a lot more in-person play. So therefore, you're able to build up a better community in terms of, like, I suppose a feeder group to the world's team.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you can say we have a small country. We've got a tiny country. For sure. That's how it is. But Danes are super nerdy in a lot of, you see in esports, you got Danish people doing excellent on different League of Legends teams, and CSGO, we're also doing quite well. And I don't know about the competitive board game scene apart from the miniature games, but I mean, we won in Milan and we placed 4th. So I think we have a lot of that, like, competitive spirit in us. So even though we're small, we're doing quite well. And I think for sure it has to do with being able to really lean on each other in a sense, because the internal competition, I guess, is smaller because we're so small. So we're trying to get each other to be better. And academy has been cool. I know France are doing it before us, and they're doing it very well, I think, with this academy session. I think they have like maybe 50 players to choose from when they want to pick their Worlds team out of 8.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think this year we had, I think, 20 people in the academy, which is up 10 from last year. But out of those 20, I think maybe 10 to 12 actually like said, I want to be on the team. Of course, because you got to also see yourself investing the time and seeing yourself being at the top of, you say, the rankings in Denmark. Not that we have. We've just started having a ranking system, but yeah. So that's not how we pick.
Yeah. How does your nation generally pick your players? Is it based off purely where you went in your ranking system?
No. No, it's not, because that's also quite new. I think it's just like, I applied to be a captain last year because our captain from Milan, he sort of resigned that position. So someone had to pick it up and I got elected, and I just de-elected myself after last year and put myself up again for election, you know, just so you have everybody got a chance to get that position, and nobody else wanted to be the captain. So I got put in that position again. And then I just looked at all the people in the academy and had a talk with other people in the competitive scene, and I picked from those. But again, turning back to the three regions, we got the three regions in Denmark, and we elected one representative of each region.
Okay.
Sort of give their insights. And they're also like responsible for trying to push, like make the hobby grow. Because I mean, everybody's interested in that. Because we are a lot of middle-aged white men, you know.
So, I mean, who would have guessed from Europe?
Who would have guessed, right? And it would be nice to get some more younger people into it. So we're also trying to push that a little bit. So by having these representatives that know the local clubs better than I do, and I listen to their voice as well on who we should elect. I hope we pick the 8 right players. I think we got a super strong team this year. I know this interview is not all about Worlds, but I can't help to think about it because it's just like so on my mind.
Yeah, well, it's like, 2 weeks away now. So, I mean, it's on top of every player's mind.
Absolutely.
It's at the forefront there.
Yeah, exactly. But we got some up-and-comings, and I'm sure next year there'll be some swaps in the team. Not knowing who that'll be, but just I think that, you know, people are either going to say take a step back, or new people are going to be able to step up. Little dog in the background.
So like your current team is sort of like 28 to 35-ish sort of level for player age?
Yeah, I think that's about right. We got one young kid called Bertram, so just a shout out to him. He's been competing at a lot of tournaments lately. Always doing quite all right with his dad at the side. So I hope we can get more kids like that.
It's exciting to see.
Yeah, in Sweden there was a kid that I think won a tournament not too long ago. It was just super, super cool. Yeah, and you know, I can tell when I go to the local hobby stores, the small ones, that they're also struggling a little bit, right? Because the hobby as a whole, I think, it's surviving, but it's not growing either, at least in Denmark. Yeah.
Why do you think that isn't for Denmark, would you say?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think like the younger generation, they just have so many other options of how they can meet and do stuff socially. Like lots of different board games and lots of different, like, of course, computer games and lots of hobbies and options to choose from. So what happens... So if that is correct, then what could happen would mean that there'll be a lot less focus. And to play a game like Age of Sigmar, to have a competition, to have a tournament, you need a group. You can't play just internationally at your local club all the time. That won't happen, right?
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah,
you need that community there to be able to constantly have fresh people flowing through to help bolster like the group size. Exactly. Otherwise, it's just going to dwindle over time.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. And a lot of us got kids, right? So that, I mean, it does take up some time.
Yeah, a bit. Having kids, having partners, having to play competitive games is not the easiest thing to do.
Wife's a big cheerleader. I mean, like, we just bought, like, a year ago, we bought a house together, and first time meeting neighbors, she was like, "Oh, this is my husband. He just won the world championship in Warhammer. His name is Rune." I was like, "Hey guys, what's up?"
Oh,
So I think that's great.
that's good to hear that.
She's a big cheerleader. I love that.
Is she interested in the hobby at all?
Not one bit. Like,
Okay.
she's trying, asking questions and that sort of thing. But you know, she's not. I don't think she'll ever play a game of Warhammer. A couple of other partners on the national team. They have a sort of tried it a little bit. I think I will get an assistant coach this year, which will be
Nice.
one of the guy's wife. So it's gonna be fun.
That's cool. What is your world's team structure like? Like, what have you got set up in terms of players and coaches and stuff like that?
We had a roster of eight players and a head coach, and then an assistant coach. But one of the players had to, unfortunately, not attend.
It's always rough.
It happens, and totally understand his decision. But that meant the coach had to play. So we just changed it about a little bit, but we got a head coach still, and we have a I think you're only allowed to have one assistant, but we got another assistant that just helps. They're not allowed to be close to the tables if there's a situation where there's too many people, but she can help anyway. In other aspects, of course. France, they got a chef.
Yeah, I know they got chef, they got masseuses and everything else. It's wild.
It's awesome.
Like that next level of
It's
it's
next
that
level.
esports level.
That is esports level, yeah, for sure. And I think they have like I think they're able to get good sponsors. We're struggling on that part.
I think most countries are struggling for sponsors. I don't think outside of France it's quite as at that level.
Exactly. It must be some rich, I don't know who their sponsor is. It might be some intricate person sponsoring with his own wealth, private funding.
Yep.
He
It's
can
very cool to hear,
he
though.
it is very cool to hear. He can be in touch with me if he wants.
Your
Yeah.
name will be linked down below if you want to get in touch
Exactly.
with Rune. You can. So, does your head coach, does he or she do the pairings and everything else and team management, or what? Whose role does that fall to?
So we have that there's able to be three people attending the pairing process. Coach, captain, and another electee. And so it's a lot of the time it's me and this electee person that also plays on the team, Alexander, our best player on the team. Or he also does the pairing process, and then we have a third person. And usually that's the amount of people you want to be because you prep the pairing beforehand. So when you do it, a lot of it is executing. Something that's surprised me is that when we have a pairing process with an opponent team, a lot of the time, 5 minutes figuring out who the defender will be. And I'm like, how did you not know this beforehand? Because you have been presented no new information at the table, so you could have just thought that out. So we have that sort of prepped before round, just so you don't try and mentally be as calm and not stressed out, or stamina is kicking in if you have to think too much on the spot. But yeah, we love that process.
Because when I was speaking to Matt Terrell, because he was the captain for last year, because of the pricing expenditure we've got to spend to get over there, we had core eight players and that was it. And I know Matt struggled to try and do the pairings as well as do the games as well, because it's a big undertaking. How have you found it then to be a player and to do pairings as well?
You do get exhausted. So I'm happy there were three. I set out two rounds last year. Like saying, I won't do the pairing this time. And so we were able to, you know, it's a bit of a rotation in it. It's sort of strange because when you have a tournament in Denmark or like in your local tournament, you're playing five games in a weekend. I guess you're sometimes a little bit exhausted on the Sunday, you know, on your third game. But at Worlds, it's just different because you're thinking about the next round right when your round is over. And in that time, you also got to get food, snacks, and water, and those sort of things. So you definitely do get exhausted by it. Yeah, but we're just rotating a little bit who does the pairing, and we're trying to prep as a team as much as we can before the actual process. We have a huge Excel sheet with matrices, and we're using that to sort of evaluate what to do. I forgot what country it was, but they were talking about building an AI model to...
It would probably be Team England with, I think, JP Gannis does a lot of the AI stuff. He done a lot of the Meta Watch or Meta Breakers. If you don't remember what that website was, like a few years ago, he done all of that. And I think he helps Tom with the Excel spreadsheets and stuff like that they have for Team England.
Yeah,
They've got the tech. they've got the tech and the brains.
Yeah. We also got a pretty well-developed Excel sheet, but of course not an AI model. Yeah.
You always need like an Excel god for team pairings, especially with eight players. It definitely helps a lot than using pieces of paper or bits of card.
Yeah, that gets tough. Yeah, that would get tough. But people do it differently. Like they rate if the green, yellow, red, or they rate percentages of how likely they are to win, or you could rate it like how many points are you going to take home, 0 to 20. So different approaches to take it. And I think that's also something we are trying to strengthen in the Scandinavian community is to share those things a little bit more. So expanding on being collaborative as a country, we would like to be more collaborative in Scandinavia to, you know, take down France and England. And Spain is going to be excellent this year, I think. Scott's got some crazy good lists. Like, it's gotten very strong. Just based on rumor and lists. We'll see what happens at Worlds.
And how are you guys feeling about your overall preparedness and readiness with pairings and your armies and stuff like that? How's your overall group going?
I think we're very prepared. We're definitely going to take it home. So there's no question there. But I think
it's like you like to hear that you've got to go in confident. If you're not going in confident, well, they're not going to win.
Yeah, I'd rather be proven wrong. But not have the confidence that we can do it. I think it's anybody's game. Like honestly,
it really is.
And for sure.
How are you feeling about your first matchup into Team Canada?
Oh, yeah, I think it's going to be good. To some of the interviews they had over there, it was one that was, I think it was a podcast, was probably recorded just when lists came out, I think, because the guy from Team Canada, I forgot his name, he didn't really understand what the hell we were doing with our lists. So, of course, I hope that they still have that sensation that why are they bringing these models? Because, of course, that'll give you an upper hand. Bob, I think it's going to be lots of fun. I think Jordan from Seasons of War is on the team.
Yes, he is. I believe he's captain.
He's captain, yeah. He's not very active on the captain's Discord. I might say that, Jordan. But
it's got too many bat reps to record.
Yeah, exactly. No, but like he seems super friendly, and I really like what he's doing for the hobby as a whole, bringing like high production value, YouTube bat reps, You know, and that's also why I said yes to this interview with you today, Sam, is because, you know, your podcasts are also excellent, and
oh, thank
having
you.
those good quality things about Age of Sigmar is what makes the hobby grow.
I do appreciate the kind words. Thank you very much. Have you got any, do you know much about Team Canada outside of Jordan and Season of War?
Nah, just okay. Their lists, honestly, and following them a little bit on Twitter. I've never been active on Twitter before, like a month ago. And there started to come a lot of, I think Spain started the banter, and now,
yep,
now
the sledging wars has been going on.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So you run the Team Denmark Twitter? Is it leaked that you're the runner of it?
Another guy does. Another guy does. Yeah. Sven is on it a lot, and then we actually just elected another guy who's not on the team to help us manage it.
Gonna up the game.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Dan is making some great videos as well, one for each team.
Oh, has he got videos going?
Yeah, I just made one 2 hours ago.
Oh yes, so you're Dan Australian. Unsupervised.
Yeah, Dan. So, yeah, exactly.
Yep.
Yeah,
he's doing brilliant stuff there.
Yeah, for sure.
I just seen the Australian one he put out, and it was pretty good.
Yeah, I just saw that he put it out. I haven't seen it yet, but the other ones have been fun.
I see Tom's already trying to rig the pairings against Team Canada for you guys.
Yeah.
Trying to match you up with Dayton.
Yeah, Dayton, that was the guy that was in the interview. He seemed like a nice guy.
Oh, yes, yep.
He seemed like a really
yes,
nice guy.
Yes, he is, yeah. Own track with Dayton heaps. He's a brilliant guy. He just is constantly on Twitter when he's at work and not on Twitter when he's at home. So he's got plenty of time to talk to everyone. I know he's a big social butterfly, Dayton.
Awesome. I think that's the vibe I've gotten from him, and when we play the games, we have this that was introduced by Sven, actually, who's an old EDC guy, so from before Worlds. The rest of the team, we're all new players, like me, or new two and a half year old players, or experienced in the hobby. But Sven, he goes way back. ETC and Warhammer Fantasy, and he said that in Denmark they always used to say we play hard but fair. And as cringe as that sounds, it's also like it just means we there's nobody ever cheats or tries to gain small advantages in any sense, and we expect the same from our opponents. Like we have a little pep talk when we meet, not a pep talk. We have a little sort of introduction when we do the pairing about how we expect the game to be played, just so there's agreement there, which could be about, for instance, how you measure with your measuring tool. Like you don't measure half a meter up in the air. You try and measure as close as you can to the table. When you roll dice, you remove the misses, like the ones that weren't successful, because then the opponent can see like the successful dice on the table. And agree to that, right? We play without take backs, and I think that's for some reason quite new in the even in the competitive scene, that you don't do take backs, where like, oh, I meant to have done this, can I just do it a phase later in the game? And a lot of people would expect that they were allowed to do that, but I'm also seeing the competitive scene change around that a lot. That is now is more common knowledge that you can't do that because it's a sequential game, right? But yeah, so just saying.
Yeah, it's all about setting expectations at the start of the game.
Yeah, because everybody wants to have a good time at the end of the day while you're there. Like, so just setting expectations is a good thing. Like, we also like to roll with the same pair, like everybody rolls with the same set of dice. Try and do the initiative roll with the same dice, and it's not that we're suspecting people to cheat. It's just that okay, then it's even odds because dice are not always super even. You know, everybody got lucky dice. It's just
everyone's got that dice they like to roll for priority because you feel like it rolls better. Whereas that shouldn't like everyone has a superstition, and I know everyone how they feel about their dice, but I feel like that shouldn't be a thing because you've picked that dice for a reason, because it generally it feels like it rolls better. So why are you rolling a dice that feels slightly unfair?
Yeah, exactly. If it feels like it rolls better, then picking that would actually, that would be wrong, right? So unless the other person can roll with the same one. So yeah, of course, when we play locally, have a fun game, that's not the situation. But when we're at Worlds, you know, it's supposed to be the best players in the world. So we just want to have it be about that.
Yeah. And then you're at that playing at that top level. So everyone's got also got the same expectations. And they're all there for the same reasons. They're not a new person that's new to the game. They're all at the top of their game. They know all their rules. They probably know your rules as well, what they should do. There's a lot more of a different gaming style when you're at that top end compared to at a local tournament where there's a whole range of players.
Yeah. But even, you know, we just go through it. We never had anybody say like, oh, we don't want to play it this way. Because we're just like talking about topics that everybody agrees on, but just still reinstating it. It can be beneficial for like setting the stage a little bit. So we just like to play fair in that sense. And let's say, oh, too bad you forgot to move your endless spill at the end of the hero phase. We're now in the movement phase and you've moved the model too. We're not at the end of the hero phase anymore, so you can't move it. You forgot it. And I think not forgetting your stuff is also part of the skill. You know, when you're getting exhausted on stamina 2 days in. It shouldn't scare people off from attending the event. I think everybody's having a great time.
I think people have already set that up for themselves once they they're playing at that level. Like, you can't expect someone to do a take back or ask to take something back.
Exactly.
Like, you're at that level. It should just be common nature that that's what you're playing as. And I don't think, with people playing at that level, I don't think they're already at that level to expect it. Like, it's not something new to them. So hopefully it shouldn't scare people away from applying for the world's team in general, for any country.
Exactly. And you have all the world, you have all the time in the world to prep, sort of prepare that mentality, have some of those games in your club as well. So you have the games you take when you're just got off work and you're exhausted and you just want to have a good time, maybe have a beer. And you also have the games where you're like, okay, let's pretend that we are playing at a tournament, like international tournament that everybody paid a lot of money to attend. Because that goes into it, yes. I guess, right?
How do you guys practice locally with clocks?
Yeah, we do. And I think we also, of course, not do it. I love playing with the chess clock because it gives me calmness. I think that can sound ironic, I guess, but it gives me calmness when I'm thinking out my plan. As a Lumineth player, in your hero phase, I think taking a step back and thinking about how you want to do your whole turn, that would be a good tip for people playing. I can think generally, but if you're playing an army like Lumineth, that's super important. Being able to take that time on my time without thinking, oh, am I being rude now spending so much time thinking of this? I love the chess clock being there. And we also tried to push that in 21. I don't think it was part of the 21 Worlds, but we did suggest it. And it was part of 2022. I think it just happened out of nowhere that it got a lot of traction, that's how you play it now.
Yeah.
The game has actually evolved, I guess, last couple of years.
Well, it works really well with the chess clock. I think I spoke on one of the last episodes. There's a player called Kron who was playing with KO. And KO generally with big boats, so you've got not much to move, not much hero phase. And so you just sort of sat down for 20 minutes and worked out how you needed to unpick the matchup he was playing into. But it was on chess clock, so it was all on his own time. Like, if he ran out of time, well, that's his fault. But he's not taking or stealing from an allotted group time. Exactly. It's just your own personal time. So it works really well for competitive aspects.
The other person doesn't get irritated, so the other person has a good time. He's thinking he's winning in that situation as well, because he's, you know, he's spending the other person's time on it. So, yeah, I do enjoy that. I enjoy that. I honestly also, I also just we've been talking a lot about competitiveness. I also love the hobby side of it. Is I've been not doing a lot of that due to time, but I think, and there's a word for it in English, I'm not sure what it is, but when you're doing an activity where you're using a sufficient amount of your brain focus, like that you can't think of anything else than what you're doing, but you're not straining your brain to do that activity. I'm not sure what the word is, but it's like that's sort of the vibe or the situation I get into when I'm sitting down and painting miniatures, right? I can't think of problems with kids, or problems at work, or not necessarily negative things, could be positive things,
You're being
but you're
absorbed in the
only able to
hobby. I
focus
can come
on
up with a phrase,
like,
but not a, I know there's definitely a word, and I can't think of it either now. But you're all encompassed by the hobby. Like it's what all you can think about. There's no outside distractions. You're just focused and being able to absorb what you're working on without outside distractions.
That's at least how it is for me. I mean, I've seen a couple of interviews with with Rob, where he's able to paint and have an interview at the same time. Fuck no, I would not be able
Yeah, nothing.
to
I don't
do
think I could do that either.
that. It would be a really crap interview, but he's able to pull it off. Guess it's ADHD or something, but like it just I can do that. I can have like a light conversation with my wife while I do it, so I think she also thinks it's more fun than me, I don't know, playing a video game or something.
Yeah, that's what I find as well. I can have a small conversation, but it can't be too deep or can't be too interactive because then you're not focusing on your painting or you're not focusing on the conversation. What aspects do you enjoy most about the hobby? Do you enjoy the painting side or you do enjoy modeling? What's your main take for the hobby?
I like the painting side of it. Like I just painted up my Spirit of the Mountain, the Lumineth, the big cow for my world's list. There's so many small details in it, and I thought I'd have a shit time painting it because all the trimming, but that was a joy to paint. And I like trying new techniques, like strange techniques. Like for this one, there's all the armor on the model has like small crevices,
Crevices, yep.
with lines where you can fill out with with inks, and then you can take like like the thing that you clean your ears with.
Oh, a Q-tip.
A key chip and with some white spirit on it, and you can sort of remove whatever's on top, and that worked really well. And I just tried it out, thinking, "Oh, this might work." I think that's the engineer in me coming up when I'm sitting and painting. I'm an engineer. I'm thinking, okay, maybe there could be a method here that could be
Yep.
better than just painting it. So I like that. I also like doing bases for some reason. I think that's like the creation, and you can be a lot more. Like not violent, but more like
Haphazard.
risk-free.
Yep.
Yeah,
There's,
exactly.
yep.
When you're doing the strokes, and it has to look natural. The base, if it's like a forest base, doesn't need the little bush doesn't need to be in this specific position, because you know nature is wild. So I also like that
You can
part of the
tell
hobby.
stories with bases however you want, and you don't have to. If some
Exactly.
people don't want to cut up models, so you don't have to cut up models to tell your story. You can tell it through your bases, be it like you've got your
Yeah.
zombies in a forest or in a swamp or even in a
Yeah,
village or
exactly.
something. So you can tell story just with the bases and completely change how your army feels based off how you've based
Yeah.
them.
I love that. I think there's a little bit of a risk in the community because of the books that coming out by Games Workshop are so frequent that the level of like how much you invest on the hobby at tournaments are being lower and lower. In Denmark, a lot of the requirements for an army's paint, like the level of how detail and how much needs to be done to your army before you can bring it to a tournament has been lowered, like the expectations to be more inclusive and be more competitive because people don't have the time. But it's also a little bit sad when you're at a competitive tournament and people got gray models or people models they didn't put so much time into.
So you, what was your standard before and what is it now?
Before it was that everything had to be painted with three colors, bases had to be based like the same way. But now a lot of them don't have painting requirements anymore at all. And I honestly don't give a crap when I'm playing. Like, I don't see models when I'm playing. I just see, like, circles. But, like, before and after the game, I enjoy watching or looking at good models. Yeah, I don't really think of, oh, this spearman looks great when I'm trying to charge him with my guy.
Unless they've got a nice 3-inch long spear and you're trying to move that around the board.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
But we all play this game because we enjoy the hobby aspect. We like looking at the models. Otherwise, we'd go play some 2D pencil and paper game or something like that. We enjoy the miniature aspect. And I can understand how on the table, you're playing a competitive match. Doesn't matter if it's painted or not. Like, you play a lot of proxy hammer, so that's even more drastic than the gray models. But outside of it, we like to be immersed in the models are painted nicely and they look good on the table. They're cohesive and they're trying to tell a story. Yeah. When you miss that aspect, you're missing part of the hobby and part of the experience.
Yeah. And it's difficult for Games Workshop because, like, a lot of people have always been pushing them, make more books, make more changes during the year. Tired of this Siege Eternal Conflagration meta that's been going for half a year, or Seraphon being too strong, please make updates. And then they're doing it, and now people are like, maybe it's too much. I can't keep
up. I just
up.
Painted that model.
Yeah, I just painted this freaking model. Paid, I don't know, $100 for it or something. But... yeah, so I'm not trying to be too rough on Games Workshop. I think that part is very hard to balance as a company.
It is. It's different consumers. You've got 26 different armies and a few hundred or close to 1,000 different model ranges, and you're trying to balance them all so they all work well with each other and against each other. It is definitely a big process for them to undertake, and I could see them being able to improve with having more people involved.
Yeah. Exactly. I think on the rules side of it, there's recently came up this website called aosfaq.com.
Brilliant.
That a lot of people are using, which is community-based. And that sort of helps Games Workshop also identify the rules that needs changing or needs updating because they're inconsistent or doesn't work. Shout out to Madigan. That's a ref at Worlds. Also a huge part of Discord communities, helping people interpret rules the way they're supposed to be, or at least interpret rules how they're written. And then she's also one of the guys or the girls on the aosfaq.com.
Yeah, I think I spoke to about Tom about that because he was quite a big proponent of it, obviously using it for Worlds. So being able to have a community where you know the expectations of playing around certain rules, especially considering there's different metas and different ways rules are played all over the world. Because I was speaking to Sam about it. He's like, oh, over here in Australia, we play it to this way. And then in Europe, it plays completely different. And being able to
have
a central...
that was the Unleash.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I remember that. We didn't play it like that, just can't think of it like either. But... again, as long as there's like a "this is how we do it" document available for everybody, and that's good.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing.
That's the biggest thing.
Well, I do have some fan questions here for you, Rune. Otherwise, we'll be here all night talking, I'm sure, or afternoon for you.
All day, yeah.
Yeah. We'll start off with the best country of all, AOS Denmark. What do you think of that Sven is always end up being right?
Well, I think for starters, that might be this question might be a result of who's in charge of AOS Denmark on Twitter. Because I think that's the guy he's was mentioned in that post. But he, you know, I think if you talk enough crap, you happen to be right at least some of the time.
A broken clock is right twice a day. Right twice a day.
Exactly.
And that's how right Sven is. Twice a day and that's it.
That is how Sven is. Yeah. He talks a lot. He's a great guy. But he's good at predicting things. I'll give him that. He's good at predicting things.
Yeah. Well, we'll go on to some more country posts because the banter is strong this year. I've noticed compared to last year, there's a lot more banter going on, especially from the European countries. I know Australia is lacking. I don't think they've responded to the call out from one of – I can't remember who it was. Someone called him out anyway, and they never replied. I'm like, oh, do better.
We need to step up as well.
Yes. Team Spain want to know if you're playing with your LRL models this year.
Jorge from Team Spain, you know, he knows what buttons to press. I have one model that is a proper Lumineth model this year.
What apart one's that one?
From my endless spells.
I was going to say, is that the endless spells? Is it just the endless spells?
Yeah, I got the endless spells. I didn't count them in. Then I got the Alaritha, Spirit of the Mountain, the big cow. I couldn't find a good proxy.
Yeah, I bet. It's not a common model, that's for sure.
No, but I'm actually bringing like a proper Teclis and a proper Light of Ultharion, just if there's any Light of Sight questions. Because my Teclis is, you know, it's just a model that's regular size of a foot soldier. It's the Teclis from 92, right? So it's based, tiny. Of course, on a big base, but he's not as big as the proper one.
Yeah, fair enough.
I'm not going to try and hide him through behind a little fence and be like...
Yeah, some small little pillar, like a straight
pillar.
Exactly.
Yeah. That would not be hard but fair.
No, that's right. And then we've got AOS Norway. What is most important goal for the Danish team? Winning the tournament or not placing lower than Sweden?
We're definitely winning. Definitely winning. Because... Then we'll do both. Placing lower than last year, we beat Sweden.
Mm-hmm. And still placed lower. I think that's all that matters is you beat them, though. Like, it doesn't matter like where you placed overall. Like, you're one below them, but at least you know you beat them.
Yeah. I would. I mean, that's what I'm trying to tell myself. So.
Yep.
but when I'm looking at the rankings, then I can see us below Sweden.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem right.
Fair enough. Well, he's got two more parts to his question. Are your team able to communicate in Danish with each other, or do you normally communicate in English?
So I think that's so we got one guy from Jutland. So that was, if you remember, there's three major regions in Denmark. When he's drunk, I think it would matter what language we communicated in. It's just, it doesn't make any sense.
Okay.
his local accent over there. But you're just talking Danish. There's an old, YouTube video, I think Swedish-produced YouTube video that got quite viral, where it's a Danish people not able to communicate to each other.
Okay. Local accents. Makes more sense
sounds,
now.
Yeah, exactly. I think from like a foreign ear, it sounds absolutely horrendous, the Danish language, especially... how it's done in that video. But yeah, that's where it's from.
And then, is Danish pastry really Danish?
I have no idea.
Neither do I.
I'll have to leave him hanging.
So we've got two questions from Alliance Open Tom. Why is Ruhn so lovely, and will he be running for council after Worlds?
Oh, that's so sweet of Tom. I think I might, like, if there's a position where I can help, like, I like to help in those sort of situations. I guess that's also why I'm a captain here. I really thought about applying last year. I just wasn't sure I could put in the time.
Yeah, like, fair enough.
When I you know, I play competitive warm, and I think that just when I sign up for something, I go all in. So if I want to sign up for being a council, I want to help out.
I could see being that as well as team captain being quite a lot of things to take on board, as well as having a partner and having kids and wanting to do a hobby. There goes your whole life.
It starts to get tough. Yeah. Yeah. But also shout out, quick shout out to Tom for this year's World Prep. I think doing great, and it's just been going better ever since Milan. Apart from the location, Milan was fucking great.
Okay.
I don't know if there's any Italian teams listening here. It was the sun, great food. They had this outside venue with like grass everywhere. That was a great time.
And then I did actually do an interview with Tom, I think about 20 episodes ago. So if anyone's interested, listen to that. And I will also be booking in another session with Tom afterwards, and he can recap how the Worlds has gone for him, considering he was the host this year. So I thought that'd be interesting.
I'll give that a listen.
Yeah. He does have another question for you. He wants to know if you can pair against Dayton so he can sit next to you guys and shit talk you both.
Dayton, that's the fact player, right?
I think he's playing corn.
He's the corn player, yeah.
He does play Feck. Player. He was known for playing Feck, but now he plays corn.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. So Lumineth corn. Yeah, I think Tom might have to sit a different place.
Yes, definitely. I could see that being a very bad matchup.
Let's see what happens.
Yeah.
Let's see what happens. Yeah.
And then we've got Owen Jackson. We've gone over a little bit of it, but if you could describe the AUS scene. Are there clubs and tournaments all over the country?
There are. We got a new community starting in the central part of Denmark with a tournament called Feel No Shame. And they're able to have tournaments almost monthly, I think.
That's pretty
small
good.
Ones, but I really love their initiative. So shout out to those guys there. Super cool guys. And then in Jutland, we have the what used to be the biggest team tournament, might be again, it was just beaten by another tournament, but used to be where you would go for the big team tournaments, but obviously more on Sjælland because more people, I guess more competitive people live around here as a whole. But yeah, and please reach out if you can find me on Twitter or whatever to talk about coming over for a tournament, and I'll try and get you a free ticket if you're an international player. It depends on how far you're traveling. Trying to look into that. And
I know Owen's a bit of a tournament slut. He's gone all over the world to play tournaments. He's been in America quite a few times, all over Europe. He just plays everywhere.
Yeah, he should come over.
So I'm sure he'll probably come over.
And then he can try and place fifth in a Danish tournament. That'll be where I put him.
He is the king of 4-1s, I know. I think he's taken out a few 5-0s more recently, but I know he was the king of 4-1s. And then the last question is from Henrik. How do you keep your cool after making a mistake?
I think if I'm making one mistake, two mistakes, I think that doesn't really get to me. I think that's all right. If you're having a lot of bad luck, I think that could get to me at the end of it. Like if there's a lot of bad luck, you shouldn't try and show it because it's also a manipulative game, Age of Sigmar. At least some people are very good at that. It's not something I do a lot, but some people are good at making you tilt. And if you tilt, of course, you make worse decisions. But I think it's really just a part of the game. Like, and everybody's gonna do mistakes throughout a game. And winning Age of Sigmar is about exploiting those mistakes a lot of the time, being reactive to those mistakes. I think because the game is quite balanced right now. So 100% balanced, it would just be about who was a little bit more lucky.
And I think, everyone makes mistakes because I don't think anyone's ever played a perfect game. So there's still...
Exactly.
And because no one's played a perfect game, that means there's people making mistakes all the time.
Well, it can be tiny mistakes. Yeah.
And you did have another question, the second part to the question. How do you act friendly while denying an opponent a take back? Is it possible? Any noticeable experiences?
Yeah. I think we brushed upon it a little bit in the interview. I think... As a community, as a whole, I think we shifted more towards that take backs are not something you automatically get. Like, I think it was honestly almost at a point where, okay, I was able to identify this mistake that I just made, so I can now change it. Of that being accepted to now not being accepted. Mm-hmm. So since that has moved, I think that it's much more easy to communicate to someone asking for a take back, saying, no, of course not. And I think, again, us talking into it before games, saying we don't do take backs, that, again, you know, people are much more like, yeah, okay, fair enough. You already gave me a no. And I think for a lot of our new players, that can be a tough conversation to have at the table. So we like to do it at the pairing table, because then, you know, expectations have been set and it's easier for someone to say. Because if you give a take back that could change the course of the game, you're sort of helping your opponent win over you as a team.
And you're not going to forgive yourself if that ends up losing you or costing you the game as well, especially if you've sort of set that expectation at the start and then you've gone, oh no, you can do it. Well, then that also allows later on in the game, if something else happens, you let me have this one. And or then if you're the type of person, I gave you that take back, let me have this take back. And then it's a tit for tat and it's never ending. At least if it's set at the start, there still might be some hurt feelings, but at least the premise has been set and they can't feel hurt from you saying no because you've already told them there's no take backs.
Yeah. Yeah.
He asked that question.
Of course, take backs are, we're just talking about it as one thing, but there can be, of course, differences within a take back. Like, without being able to bring up good examples right now, there would be some take backs where you'd be like, okay, go ahead, do that, of course. But
yeah, that's fair enough. He asked that because he likes a good bit of gossip in the casual community.
Okay, he wanted me to highlight some specific teams.
Because I'm guessing he's from Denmark as well, with the tag of DK on the end.
Yeah, I think I know who it is. any questions? Good guy, good fella.
As we're ending up the show here, did you have anything you wanted to leave the listeners with?
Just tune in, keep listening to Sam's podcasts, of course, but then also tune in on all the world content and don't sleep on Denmark.
Yes, definitely. I mean, you've taken them out once before when you came fourth. You're definitely in the running, that's for sure.
Yeah. I think it may be 2 months ago, I'd be like, okay, let's go under the radar so other guys won't prep for us. But it's in 2 weeks, so don't mind saying, watch out.
Yeah. Did you have any shout-outs you wanted to throw out there? Or any grudges or any banter you wanted to throw out there?
Well, I'm looking forward to meeting United States, as we always do. We always meet them. For some reason, they are our favorite arch enemies. As we always,
I remember hearing Jeremy say that on Rob's podcast forum. Yeah, the interview. Exactly.
But shout out, honestly, there's none of the national teams or anything like that. There's any serious grudges with, only like friendly banter. Looking forward to beating the Spanish people and beating the, because. You know, that's what you want to do when you're listening to Jorge's banter on Twitter, right?
Yeah.
And showing we lost to France last year slightly, so that would be great to get that back.
And then you ranked lower than Sweden, so you got to beat Sweden again.
Yeah, that goes without saying. Got to beat Sweden. For some reason, I don't have that feeling towards Norway. I don't know why there's the special... gotta beat Sweden.
So Sweden are on the same border as you guys then? You share country border? Okay.
There's a small ocean in between. Like a bit of water in between, but we used to, Denmark used to be much larger and have a large part of Sweden under the Danish
So that's why, it's because they're taking some of your land. You want it back.
Taking some of our land, yeah. Yeah, but now there's like this middle area called Skåne And the Swedes don't really want it, and the Danish people don't really want it, but it's right between us.
Yeah.
But yeah, same. Thanks for the interview.
No, thanks for making the time to come on. I know you got a busy day on, so I do appreciate you putting aside some of your work to come on and chat with me before the world's there.
All good. All good. And have a pleasant talking to you. Have a good day.
Will do, you too.
Thank you for listening to Unidentified Wargamer. You can find links for the guests located in the description below. You can find the show on Twitter at @u_wargamer, and I will see you next week.